And now for reading and writing and radio.
Supposing I told an inquisitive woman on the train that I was an orphan and had no home. And when I got off the train and went over to where our house was, there was nothing but trees, and nobody had ever heard of me.
The author of that supposing was Alistair Reed, but it could be you. WSSR Radio at Sangamon State University presents Reading and Writing and Radio, a program about creative writing. Your host is Jacqueline Jackson, children's author and professor of literature at Sangamon State University.
We have an entire book called Supposing by Alistair Reed, and it's filled with such what-ifs. Supposing I read a book about how to change into animals and set a spell and changed myself into a cat, and when I climbed on the book to change myself back, I found I couldn't read. Supposing, just imagine, what if, are splendid places to take off for imaginative writing. Suppose an impossible wish or a ludicrous situation, and then see where you are. The book Supposing only gives the initial suggestion. Supposing I had a twin brother, but we never told anyone, and only went to school half the time each. I bet that's a supposing that most of you have had at one time or another. What if there were two of me? What I could be doing. But let's not stop with just the initial supposing. Let's take these supposings, these what-ifs, and go on with them. Explore the possibilities. For instance, one that we've had some fun with. Suppose you woke up one morning and discovered you had two heads. Well, immediately that presents all sorts of interesting possibilities. Did both heads wake up at the same time and look at each other? Or did one head wake up first and discover that the other one was still sleeping? What did you think about it? Which head is you, anyway? Is one definitely you and the other a perfect stranger? Or are both of them apparently you? Well, how now will you manage life in general? What about eating? Will both mouths have to be fed? Surely both noses will have to be blown and faces washed. You'll have two sets of teeth to brush, of course, and hair to comb. And you'll have two brains, each giving directions to the rest of you. Suppose one head wanted to go one way and one head wanted to go the other way. It's the head that bosses the body around, you know. That reminds me of there was a certain dinosaur, I believe, that was so big that his head, his brain, which I gather was scarcely larger than an egg, his brain was located so far from the rear of his body that he had another sort of secondary brain located somewhere at the base of his tail, and that brain directed his hindquarters. I imagine much the way that the man directs the hind wheels of the fire truck, the great long fire truck, so that when the front brain goes around a corner, why, the hind brain, the man in the fire truck, he turns the hind wheels. So how would you handle your two brains for your body? Then how about likes and dislikes? Some people you like very much, and other people you don't like at all. Suppose your two heads didn't like each other, couldn't stand each other. Suppose one of you liked to eat sardines and the other of you couldn't stand sardine breath. The problems, you see, get knottier and knottier the more you think about it. Take, for instance, your whole idea of yourself. That would be a problem. which you is you? Are you one or are you two? It doesn't bother you now that you have two eyes, two ears, two hands, two feet. Why should it bother you that you have two heads? Maybe it wouldn't. And then there's the whole area of getting along with one-headed people. What do they think about you? Are they afraid of you? Do they laugh at you? Are they jealous? Do you remember the story of little one eyes, little two eyes, and little three eyes? I used to do a lot of supposing, imagining, when I was a kid. One that I remember was in fifth grade. I used to pretend to imagine that the inkwell, which was built into the corner of the desk, was filled with a bottomless well of cherry pop, and that my pen was a straw. And I would lean over and take sips out of my inkwell through my pen, imaginary sips, and it was almost as good as having the inkwell really filled with pop. I still do a lot of supposing. That's one reason I like to write. For writing can make your supposings come real. Perhaps you've read Harriet the Spy and followed her imaginings, supposings, as she supposes what it's like to be an onion, what it's like to be a mug, what it's like to be various other things. Or perhaps you've read Did You Carry the Flag Today, Charlie? And experienced with Charlie what it feels like to be a rock out in the rain. I find that it's great fun to take a strange what if, or a funny one, or a scary one, or an intriguing one, and just see where that imagining takes me. I've had Marcy do a lot of this in my books, The Pale-Faced Redskins and The Ghost Boat. Here's one from The Ghost Boat. She imagined in her inner eye what Pleasant Lake might look like with all the water gone, as if the first Chinese brother had swallowed it all up. She saw a great basin shining and glistening and dripping and steaming, as the ground does when the sun comes out after a hard rain. But the basin would probably be irregular, with ridges and pools and lopsided places, maybe even a shelf of rock or some huge slimy boulders here and there. And the bottom and slopes would be alive with silvery flipping and flopping of surprised fish, little minis flipping around the upper edges and the great fishes flopping in the middle, and there'd be hundreds of turtles crawling, all sizes, with maybe a few giants among those, too, and some fish that were still in the few pools thrashing around with their backbone fins above water. The seaweed. That would all be lying down, limp, coiled, fallen this way or that, big piles of wet mush. Would it cover the bottom all the way to the middle? Probably not. Probably it'd be in a belt at a certain level all the way around, just as you could see it from the top, with different colors and different patches, and then maybe just fuzz on the deeper parts of the bottom, like green underwater moss. And here and there, a patch of seaweed would be thickly peppered with water bugs, like collapsed blackberry bushes. And then there'd be the litter of everything anybody'd ever dropped in the lake. What a tangle of fish lines and hooks and sinkers, and anchors that had come off anchor chains, and her sneakers that had sunk when she and Kenny tipped over in the canoe last year, and at least three flashlights that she definitely knew about, and all the rusty bailing buckets and bait buckets and toy pails and shovels and Thad's sunfish bucket they'd never found, and beer cans and bottles that the fishermen threw in, and then sunken logs and branches and parts of docks and barrels from underneath rafts and old waterlogged boats, and everything would be all greenish and coated with snails and slime. All Marcy does in that instance is to suppose what it's like. She doesn't have anything happen on account of it, but she could have imagined herself there, suddenly on the bottom, fanning her oars in the air, the rim of the lake far above her, and having to get out and slither up through the wet, mushy seaweed to the top. Here's one where she imagines what it's like to be as little as a water bug. Once upon a time, began Marcy, whose turn it was to tell the story, there was a little girl who liked to swim, Not the crawl and all those strokes going fast and making a lot of churning up the water and winning prizes, but she just liked to do her own strokes so that she could see where she was going, lazy-like, in a sort of quiet breaststroke, but not quite, because she did a side stroke kick with her feet. Okay, she liked to swim, Janice interrupted. Now make something happen. I'm getting to it, Marcy said. Well, near where she swam was a water bug colony. She liked the water bug colony because they liked to swim so much, too, all lazy, not out to win any prizes, and then they were such sleek little bugs with no hairy legs or anything. I bet under a microscope, said Thad, everything has hairy legs under a microscope. And lots of times she tried to swim up to the water bugs, but as soon as she got close, they would all streak away. Well, she wished and wished she could swim with the water bugs, and one day she had an idea. Suppose she went underwater and came up in the middle of the water bug colony. They might not notice her. So she tried it. She went underwater and came right up in the middle of the colony, and sure enough, they didn't notice her. But the reason was she'd grown as little as a water bug, and so she didn't startle them. And she discovered that even though she wasn't a water bug, she could do everything the water bugs could do, like scooting around real fast on the surface, like those electric bump cars at the fair, and talk water bug talk. How could she tell? Asked Betsy. They'd say, oops, sorry, in real high squeaky voices when they bumped into her, and she'd say, oops, sorry, when she bumped into them. So after a while, she thought she'd ask some questions, because after all, it's not often you get a chance to be part of a water bug colony, and she wanted to find out all about it. So the next one that she collided with, she asked, do you go to school? And as it was bouncing away from her like a billiard ball, it exclaimed, school? What's school? And so the story goes on as Marcy tells it, that every question she asks the water bugs, they are amazed and they know nothing about such things. And she finally concludes that being in a water bug colony is a pretty dull sort of place. But meanwhile, her imaginings carry her into the relation of one water bug colony with another water bug colony. Do they ever send out a Columbus from one to discover whether there is life going on in the other galaxy, so to speak? And she has lots of fun with imagining what it's like to be a water bug. One thing I've never imagined but might be fun is to try, supposing I got small as an ant and walked into an ant colony. What would be going on? What would be their reception of me? What would I see? The words what if, suppose, imagine, give a feel of intrigue, of excitement. Another phrase that's similar is if only. But this phrase usually has a sadness to it, a regretful feeling. If only I hadn't gone. If only we had known about it sooner, things might have worked out differently. There's a little folk rhyme about if only. The saddest words of tongue or pen, it might have been, it might have been. A teacher in our town recently suggested to her fifth graders that they write some stories about it might have been, what would have happened if. And a girl named Andrea wrote, what would have happened if Lincoln had lived? Here's her story. John Wilkes Booth jumps to the stage. The wounded president lies unconscious. He is rushed to the neighboring house. Doctors can be seen rushing in and out of the house. In a talk with one of the doctors, he says that Lincoln has a good chance. For a week there was constant runaround. He had been moved to a hospital by then, and even Clara Barton nursed the critical president. Lincoln lives. The president has pulled through. In a few weeks, the president is back in the White House. Now he begins his plan for Reconstruction. Now let's ask ourselves another question. Why did Lincoln want to reconstruct the South? The answer is simple. Lincoln said it himself. The government of the people, by the people, for the people, shall not perish from the earth. His plan was to preserve the Union and help the South rejoin the Union as if there was no civil war. Soon the South was back in the Union. Lincoln also rebuilt the South. New buildings, new governments sprang up in the South. In his own words, Lincoln put it, with malice toward none, with charity for all, with firmness in the right. And so, as Lincoln recovered from his wounds, the nation recovered from its wounds. What might have been, if only? Just imagine. Suppose. Today, let's write down our supposings, our if-onlys. Let's imagine them beyond the first sentence and see where they take us.
WSSR Radio has presented Reading and Writing and Radio. Send your writings to Jacqueline Jackson, Sangamon State University, Springfield, Illinois, 62708.